You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Children eat worms and bugs and all sorts of things when they crawl in around.
The Wire. To try and minimise levels of youth vaping, the government has announced new regulations last week. These restrictions include regulating vape flavour descriptions, areas where vape stores can be constructed, and also regulating disposable vapes. To learn more about what these policy changes might do to help curb youth vaping and uncover what more needs to be done, I spoke to Janet Hook, Senior Professor at the University of Otago, Wellington, and Co-Director of Aspire 25. I started off by asking Janet what Aspire 25 is.
So we're one of the University of Otago's flagship research centres, and we're a collaboration of people from within the University of Otago, but also other organisations, and we work to develop and test evidence that's going to support the government's smoke-free 2025 goals. So we look at policy measures, their likely impact, and their actual impact once they've been introduced.
Janet, what are your thoughts on the new vaping regulations announced by the government?
Well, look, I think it's really good that the government has recognised that the current regulations aren't doing enough to protect young people from vaping uptake, but I do think that they could have gone a lot further. So I think measures that are going to restrict disposable vapes, so for example, the new measures require or will require disposable vapes to have removable batteries, that's a really good idea, but we know that disposable vapes are young people's device of choice. We also know that this is a technologically very innovative market, and we're already seeing disposable vapes with removable batteries being advertised as coming available shortly. So it would have been much better just to have had outright banned disposable vapes and to recognise that we needed to do that to protect young people. Some of the other measures, particularly the restrictions on retail outlets, I mean, they're important because they're not going to allow new specialist vape stores to set up near schools or marae, but they don't apply to existing outlets. So, in other words, they're helping to prevent a problem from getting worse, but they're not actually addressing the problem itself. So there could have been more done in that respect as well. The flavour names, changing those to more generic descriptors and removing the ones that really do quite clearly and directly target children is a good measure, but we also need to think about the flavours themselves and why we have so many available and if we could be doing more to regulate the range of flavours that are actually required to support people to switch from smoking to vaping. So I think, you know, the new measures are doing something to try and address the imbalance that currently exists, but I think they could have done a lot more.
Do you think these measures will reduce youth vaping then?
I think that they will do something to reduce youth vaping, but I don't think that they're going to do enough. And we need to bear in mind that youth vaping is now at high levels. So we have 10% of young people aged 14 to 15 reporting that they vape every single day, and 20% of rangatahi Māori report vaping every day. And these are young people who are just 14 or 15. So we actually need quite serious interventions to remove the availability of vaping products from young people. So we should be thinking about things like getting vaping products out of dairies and generic retail outlets. We know that there are outlets that young people go to more frequently, so they're getting high exposure to these products, that normalises vaping as a social practice, and it also makes it easier for young people to access these devices. So I think that the measures might help youth vaping to remain at current levels, prevent it from getting any worse, but I don't know that they're going to have a powerful impact on bringing youth vaping levels down.
What do you think needs to happen in terms of health, social and educational responses to somewhat deter but also prevent young people from vaping or even vaping just from the start?
Well, I think it's really important to think about social and educational responses, but I feel like the first place that we need to look is what do we need to do in the policy environment, because policies are able to shape young people's macro environment. So it's policies that can reduce the availability of vaping products, that can make these products less physically attractive and alluring to young people, and that can make them less addictive. So these are the things that we need to do. First of all, we need to stop telling young people that they need to make informed choices and take more responsibility for themselves and think about the environment that we've created for them, where these products are just so incredibly easy for them to access, so highly palatable and so incredibly addictive. So it's really policy changes that we need to be looking at first of all. And I think once we have a strong policy environment, then health and social and educational resource programs can be much more effective because they're not having to fight against it. That commercial setup that predisposes young people to want to experiment with these devices.
Do you think that the government quite, you know, putting out there that they don't want vape stores to be set up near marae's conveys the fact that they know that vaping is more prominent amongst rangatahi Māori in our communities?
Yeah, I'm sure that they do know that because the data are well documented and widely available. And I think we just need to be really thoughtful about protecting rangatahi Māori because we know that smoking prevalence has traditionally been higher among this population group, and we don't want to create environments where we manage to get youth smoking down to really minimal levels and reduce some of the inequities that have persisted over a very long period of time, only to create an environment where those same inequities can emerge in relation to vaping.
What are some of the long-term impacts of vaping that have been discovered so far?
Well, we don't know the long-term impacts of vaping simply because we don't have data that extend over a sufficiently long period of time for us to be able to discern those impacts with any real certainty. So at the moment, what we know is that vaping is likely to be much less harmful than smoking to people who are already smoking. Now, that's quite a low threshold to have to meet because smoking is such a harmful practice and is linked causally to so many health problems that people who smoke over a long period of time are going to experience. So it's important that for those people, there is a reduced harm alternative that they can switch to. And that's really important in Aotearoa at the moment because we have some very novel smoke-free policies that are going to be introduced over the next couple of years. So smoke tobacco products are going to become much less available and they're going to become much less addictive. So for people who are heavily dependent on nicotine, we do need to make sure that there are alternative reduced harm sources of nicotine available for them. And obviously we need to support them over time to reduce their dependence on nicotine because most people don't want to be dependent on something.
That was Janet Hook, Senior Professor at the University of Otago, Wellington, and Co-Director of Aspire 25, speaking to me about youth vaping in Aotearoa.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.